down to brass tacks. Hello?
Mr. S, a blessed day to you, sir.
Yes, sir. Before we go any further, a blessed day to you, too.
Thank you, kindly.
The caller wants you to answer the question.
Are you willing
to sacrifice some of your pension in these hard times in the same way that you were committed to doing it under the Democratic Labour Party a few months ago?
I heard him. Mr. S, let me say to you, I want to wish you a beautiful weekend, you and your family and so on as well, and the station, and Barbados as well. Let me say to him and to the nation, some weeks ago, or over a month ago, I don't think you were on that particular day, I was talking to Mr. Johnson, and Mr. Johnson asked that question at the end of, we went off. I didn't get a chance to answer it, and Mr. Johnson did say that he hoped when I come back, next time I'm conversing with him, that I would answer that question. But let me say to you here now, and this question is, I'm answering Mr. Johnson's question, because he asked the question first. My question is, yes, I made that commitment some time ago when the Democratic Labour Party was in office, where I said that I would be willing to give a percentage of my pension for my nation, because my nation needs it and it has a problem. I remember we had problems at the hospital and so on. And I said, yes, if our government had asked for that, I would do it readily. Let me say this to you, Mr. Ellis. One of the things that I have always done, I was born to two parents who were never covered. My mother was born in December, my father was born in August. And they were very generous people, hardworking, but generous. And I have been blessed with both of that, the attributes of my parents as far as that is concerned. I do not make a commitment unless I am serious about it, and I mean it. I would not say to you, I'll give you something, and then I feel wrong. I don't do that. And I want to say to the caller that I'm not a person who we're just talking for talking's sake. If you say you love your nation and you care about your nation,
your offer, doesn't matter. His question is, does your offer stand today?
Yes. I said it then. I'm saying it now. And I'm saying it in the future. That's what I'm saying to you. I am not.
So what, you know, in the absence of the government coming to the public and saying, this is what we want pensioners to do, you could volunteer to take some of your pension and give it to some charity or give it to some program that would have the same effect of making a contribution without having to wait for the Prime Minister and Minister of Finance to say to people like you, we want you to do more.
But how do you know that I don't already make contribution?
Well, it's up for you. It's up to you to say. The very fact that you said to me that your offer stands gave the impression that it was an offer made, but an offer not yet accepted.
And therefore, you
would have to go the extra mile to say it to me, but in the absence of that, this is what I do.
No, I don't have to. I will not say that to you.
Okay.
I will not say that to you. But look, you know, we have people in Barbados who, because in their life, a particular government or a person, everything is okay.
And some who believe that because they like a particular party or government, everything is wrong.
That would happen as well, yes. Because then remember, every man is riding his own eye, you see? Let me say here, you know, but I remember as well the government some time ago had discontinued the subsidy that they were giving to manufacturers and so on when they're bringing machinery and so on, things of that sort, because they said that the time had it was up for them to discontinue that. I did not hear anybody from the manufacturing department or industry speak about that, in that the government had not even thought of looking at another area, how they can assist those manufacturers with the cost of the input of the machinery. Because, Ms. Ellis, there's always a way how things can be done. There's always a way. Because if the world
Which government failed to do that?
The present government, you didn't hear it debated in Parliament, was that it? It was debated. And also it was also
so this problem only began under them, right?
And the issue of failure to implement
a program of that nature would rest exclusively with this administration.
But you're missing the point. Don't try to haul other things across the trail. No, let's deal with what we're dealing with. And I'm saying to you that if you have, and you know that we are looking for as many industries as we possibly can now to help drive our economy. But why would you not deal with what we're dealing with in your
trade? Man, you're not easy at all. Yeah, in principle...
You can be very mischievous.
Look, you know that if you say to me, this is a national failure, I don't have a difficulty accepting that it's a national failure. What I do know is that Barbados's economic problems didn't begin today. Let's trace the last major problem back to 2007, 2008, and in particular 2008 when we had the financial meltdown. So we have been trying to find solutions to our problem since then. So to say to me that the failure to give assistance to the manufacturing sector is something that must be placed exclusively at the feet of a new government when you've had a previous administration there. Seems as though you're just trying to play politics. No, that's how it would appear.
Ms. Ellis, one of the ways I believe that could have been helped, you see that when government went to Parliament to stop this salary cut and so on, which was done under the Sandiford administration and things of that sort,
yeah.
I believe that is a very pertinent law that could have been. In that, rather than sending home people, Ms. Ellis, you could get civil servants and you can talk to them and their union. Because, look, I am sure they would rather not anybody go home. I am certain to that. Because, look, it's not easy taking food off of people's tables. It's not easy. And I believe rather than saying, bring the people together, even though that's a law that was implemented, it is necessary. Rather than you would now bring a bulldozer and crush people, you can look at that and you can implement that. Ask the people and put it to them. I am saying to you,
you guys behave as though when that was implemented, Barbadians went to church and sang hallelujah.
But I remember
that as a consequence of how things unfolded back then, 20,000 people marched twice.
Yeah, okay, but
you know, to say that you can sit down with people and reason, you can. that decision was highly unpopular at the time. Indeed, it created the political environment for the Barbados Labour Party to come and say, it will never happen again. We're going to change the constitution.
You see, this is the problem. Because the unions objected to it. But if you can now bring, they see what the position is. And they can't prevent people from going home now. Are they going to march again then?
They didn't start them from going home before.
I'm saying there must be a human face to it, Mr. Ellis.
Look.
Must be.
I want to suggest to you, though, that how human a face is applied to a problem depends heavily upon the depth of the crisis and the options available.
That's where that should be.
And I have not heard of these great alternatives that were going to be sustainable. When the government of Barbados took that decision back in, it was 91 or thereabouts, it was not the only measure that the government took to try to save the Barbados dollar and to save the Barbados economy. And from all indications right now, the Barbados economy is worse off now than it was then. So it means that the measures that are available to you are going to be far more severe. And this notion that you have been able to avoid a devaluation of the dollar and all is well, I go back to discussions that were taking place in 91. It was known then, it was relevant then, it is relevant now. A failure to devalue the Barbados dollar does not mean that you do not have tough alternatives.
But the measures now is more drastic now because of what?
Yeah, because of the depth of the crisis.
Yeah, but what you're doing? You know what you're doing now? You all talk about kicking a can down the road, but at least when that can was going down the road and was keeping noise, you know there were people and they're keeping noise. But now what you've done? You've crushed it completely.
So you silenced them.
Listen, the voices that you're hearing are now, those are crazy that are coming up from the grave. They're buried.
They're dead and buried.
You crush them.
I I'm not going to be here to tell you that people are not going to be crushed. I think we are all in this together. I mean, I don't sit down here and tell you that I am not concerned about the impact on my own disposable income. And I must tell you that there are many people who are living in a world of great uncertainty. Because when you look at a combination of what the country faces in general, when it comes to the economy, and when you look at what companies are facing in this country today, and how things play out overall, there is no degree of certainty whatsoever. What we do know is that we've been talking about these problems. We have been watching the downgrades. All these people who were investing in the government paper and were blissfully doing so while the downgrades were taking place, because nobody was saying to them, but this is the implication of these downgrades for the paper that you hold. And now they say, well, you know, look what has happened to me. I mean, there are other places where people have suffered even more than that, even the principal. But it's the magnitude of the problem. But what this crisis has shown me quite clearly is that no matter how well you invest, if the macro picture deteriorates, your investment is in trouble. And you have no certainty because you have taken a risk. And the risk that has been taken by people that bought the government paper, I don't think it is much different from the people who took the risk with Clico and bought the annuities. You know, one group of people went for interest, the next one went for interest and safety. But the net effect is that, you know, you've taken a big blow. And I sympathize with people who are on fixed incomes, who used to live in a way that said, look, I invested wisely. I did so to look after my old age. I have been able to go into retirement and I can still drive a car, go to the supermarket, pay my bills, pay my insurance and that sort of thing. And all of a sudden, it seems as though the sky has fallen. I am fully sympathetic to that. But I tie all of that to the national picture and all that we were discussing for so long. And it is shown that the warnings that were made, that came from people over a sustained period, were not hollow. There were real implications associated with the slide in the Barbados economy. The NIS and the situation with respect to NIS. Now you see, the Prime Minister comes and the first announcement is we have decided that we are going to restructure the debt. But now you understand what that really means. Now that everything is being rolled out, you now realize, but wait, but this is a serious thing. I thought this was going to affect only the foreign creditors. I didn't realize it was going to hurt me so badly. I thought we just would avoid paying these people whatever interest that was owed on the Credit Suisse loan and that sort of thing. No. And that's why we need to ask more questions. We need more explanations. And we don't need a cover-up. Let people know up front what is the price that must be associated with this. So the explanation that came from the actuary, the consultant actuary yesterday, was a very important intervention in explaining it. My question on that is it wise to leave that to be explained by somebody else? Or do you come and explain it yourself? Because if you don't explain it yourself, it is going to give the impression that you are not upfront with people. That's the point. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks. Well, internet connectivity has finally been restored. Let us thank all those who are responsible for making it happen. Down to Brass Tacks, hello.
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, good afternoon.
How are you, man?
I'm well, and you?
Hey, good, man. I wanted to talk about the relativity between the non-contributory and the contributory pensions. This prompted me, this call was prompted by me because of a conversation a caller had in dialogue with Dr. Maskell on Wednesday. Now, the benefits, as I know it, as a public servant, is that once you are contributing, you are going to get vacation, you are going to get sick leave, you can take 2 days off before you go to the doctor on the third day if you want to have a third day or a week. But the non-contributory pensioner would not get any vacation. Neither would he be able to stay home and get paid. Nor having been sick, he would not be able to send in a doctor's certificate to his workplace and get paid. So the benefits that can and have always been deriving from a contributory pension as against one who is not contributing, you need not to be heartless when the government gave the little pension a little lift to those who did not contribute and gave a little bit to the lower income, the lower bottom of those who contributed. And I find that people seem to be still, not covetous, but they're still unhappy with the fact.
But you don't know why.
No, wait, I can answer that. Drawing the uncontributory closer to ones who are contributing, you don't have to be heartless, because these people will be able to get a little better living.
You right, look at it from this angle.
Yeah.
People believe that if you have worked over the years, made your contributions, and basically been a good citizen in that regard,
okay,
then you should have some clear advantage over a person who didn't make the contributions for whatever reason. There are some people who fell on hard times, people who never really got much in their hands, and there are some people who just frittered away whatever they had.
All right.
And at the back of the mind for many people, it is, they see the latter. They see the last person in that group, the person who's wasted their time and their money. So they feel that, you know, to bring the two of them too close does not reward the person who has made effort enough and sends the wrong signal to the community. That's the argument that I hear.
Yeah, but this is government. You see, what I'm saying, the money that government is giving to the non-contributory pension, it does not belong to the ones who contribute. Because
no, but that's not, they understand that. That's not in dispute. That is not in dispute. What they're saying is that clear difference that differential that they talk about is being by reducing the differential, they believe that it impacts on them emotionally, because it's saying, well, you know, I could as well not have done it this way, because like a person who has done less than that is now being brought so close. So that, I think, is where the problem arises in their minds.
But they're trying to establish heartlessness. That's why I'm trying to establish that, you know, because you don't care about your brother that he can buy another toilet paper that you were buying, or you think that he had to make one toilet paper lasting for 2 months. The point I'm trying to make is love and this heartlessness behavior of human beings. I'm always coming down that line. So I ain't nothing to do with the relativity and how you think and you contributed. You had sick leave. You had vacation many years. And all the years you had vacation. You had sick leave. You stayed home 2 days. You went to the doctor and get a week home when you didn't sick. All of these things you were being paid for, and people don't recognize that. And because the non-contributed pension have been observed to be on the breadline, he must stay there, and you don't care anything about him. That's just why I'm looking at it that way.
Oh, okay. But that's your way of looking at it. Fine.
And it's a very good way too.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Nice to hear you. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. 434-1790. Yes, hi.
How you all doing? Good afternoon.
I'm well, and you?
I'm fine, Mr. Ellis. I was listening to some few callers. This is my first time calling, yeah?
Yeah.
And I was listening to a few people talking about bed mites and stuff like that. I just called to give a little tip as to how to rash them out or find out if you have any around. Now, bed mites, as they're called, they mainly live inside the mattress, okay? Damp, warm areas. So when you lay down at night, they come to surface. And one of the ways you can find out, because a bed mite is microscopic, you might be able to see it, but it's so small, it's hard to see. But if you get a good few in a tissue, you will see them, right? This is one way I learn how to do it. How to find them out. If you have a good vacuum cleaner, most vacuum cleaners are about two horsepower. And if you get a vacuum cleaner, you take off the bag off the vacuum cleaner, you get a nice strong hand towel. I think Bounty is one of the strongest out there. Put it over the hole where the bag was and install it back on the vacuum cleaner and use the hose and everything and put it on your mattress. You turn on your vacuum and you just pull. You could pull in a few times on the mattress, turn it on both sides, because at night they go under, which is more moist. And you can pull a few times, give it about 10 pulls, 5 on the top, 5 on the bottom. Turn off the vacuum, take off the tissue, and you will see how much mite can live on one spot on your mattress. They're not that easy to see. There are about 7 types strains of bed mites. And one of the best ways to get rid of mites is by using sulfur soap. So just about if you find you have a lot of bed mites on your mattress, most likely all your clothes got it by now, and all your bed linen.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
The LSV will try to change this country rod by rod. Something I would like to see happen with public service vehicles, remove all the music from these public vehicles. The music is nothing to listen to. And since the new terminal is open, I find that the bush haul vans are putting off persons by the park, and you have to walk all the way in. I think something needs to be investigated. And as far as I'm concerned, if you put me off there, I will not be paying my $2, because you have not taken me to my destination. My next point, on the areas we hear about all the negativity about young people in this country, and I traverse all 3 terminals, and I have not had a bad experience with these young people. As a person with a disability, I must say I must compliment the mannerism of these young people and the courtesy and help they offer to the blind and the disabled in these terminals. I have witnessed it. I have experienced it. And I can single out three schools at this moment. Grantley Adams Memorial, CP, Graydon Sealy. I must say, I am proud of the young people that I have come in contact with over these past couple of years. I have not had a bad experience. And I think they need to be praised. We always try to pull down the young people. But I am here to praise them today and tell them to continue what they are doing. We have some marvelous young people out there.
Okay, thank you very much.
My next point, this lawless shooting about the country is putting pressure on the NIS. Persons become disabled in some of these lawless shooting, which also put pressure on the social services of this country. And the disabled are very, sometimes in the area, are scared to step outside. When you're hearing all of these gunshots all over the place, we are part of this society. And I think a serious decision needs to be taken to see how we can curb this lawlessness in this country. You do have a nice day.
You do too. Thank you for calling. Hello. Down to brass tacks. Welcome to the program.
I'd like to just make a few points.
Sure.
First of all, Melissa, I want to deal with the court system.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the gentleman in Guyana, he just proposed having a court to deal with NIS. My argument for many years is this here. I believe that the court system should have a two-tiered approach, where you split up the court system in such a way where you have a court dealing with current matters. Like, for instance, if an offense was perpetrated last week, Wednesday, it should be dealt with as soon as possible with one court, working towards more or less the direction of the original more or less backlog. I'm saying if you do that, you will not have issues whereby you have a backlog that runs into thousands of cases. You have got a faster, speedier, more expeditious way of dealing with the justice issues instead of selling. You will not have files being misplaced and lost and whatnot. But I'm saying we have enough lawyers, yes? And if it means we have to bring more magistrates or more upper class, more or less judicial officials to expedite more or less what needs to be done inside this country, we need to do that. I'm saying that the current system as it is now, it's a one-way journey. An offense has been perpetrated today, and that goes behind a whole litany of cases that is a backlog that runs into years. Where I'm seeing here now, you continue that journey, but you have now the court system set up in such a way now that is dealing with current issues, and that is a 2-in-1 like type of exchange where you deal with things more effectively. You wouldn't have a proliferation of cases, right? That's one point. I want to look at this point with how we're using the land across Barbados and how it's going to impact on, let's say, a whole host of other things. Look at, for instance, the issue here with the two high-rise duplexes in Valerie. Now, each one of those duplexes, they house 36 families, right? 36 families. When the postman goes in or post lady goes downstairs, there are 36 letterboxes with 36 names and apartments. That postman is not going to 36 different houses. If you look at the cost of motorcycles, the cost of fuel, the cost of time it will take for the postal service to get mail out across the island. Our next thing is, too, each one of those duplexes have one skip. So it's not a garbage truck stopping at 36 different houses. It's a garbage truck coming and picking up one skip. Look at the economics. Look at the amount of fuel you save from the refuse collection authority. We need to realize this island is quite small, and we need to understand we have to use the land very wisely, okay? You have a situation here, we have these new housing projects all across Lancaster and all below Moncrief and so on as well. When you do that, right, you have this situation whereby right now in St. Michael alone, there are thousands of water leaks that are not being address. Okay, whether it's a manpower issue or not. But you know what? They are hemorrhaging from the main water table. Okay? Now, when you build new housing developments, subsequently in the future, what you're doing, you are increasing the network of future leaks as well, too. That would bleed from more or less the entire more or less water table. And next thing is, too, you're building over water aquifers. So the human print is going to come now where you're going to be putting chemicals down into the soil over new water aquifers, which is Clorox.
Why is that?
Every household uses chemicals, isn't it? And then you have the odd issue where people will use Roundup.
There are areas in this country where the water supply is protected and people are discouraged from putting their houses in those areas. And, well, we do have a problem in, let's say, the Bell, where there's a need to sewer some of the houses out there to better protect us in that regard. But in general terms, there are conditions, there are controls over how people, where people place houses and how we seek to protect the water supply. But, I mean, I'm not saying that we are flawless, but, this is not done willy-nilly. Anyhow, thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
I assure you, you've seen the new requirement for renewal recently.
No, I mean this whole question of having to walk with a bill?
Yes.
What's the difficulty that you have with it?
No, let me say for instance, my cousin went to get his renewal on Monday. As you know, it was in effect from Monday, right?
Yes.
But he's still a former, his parents.
So that's a problem because he has no proof of that type.
Oh, right.
But he doesn't have any other form of identification of anything to prove where he's living?
Well, he's only EID card because he only turned 20 on the 1st of this month. That's what we're trying to say. He only had his license last year.
So what they told him when he got there?
He can't renew it. And most of these people, bills come in, like their parents are still in their grandparents' name from way back then.
Yeah. Now, if you live with a woman, it's coming in her name.
All right. So, you understand? So that's going to be a lot of people don't really know about it, you know.
Yeah, you see, that's an interesting point that's been raised because I realize that there's been a lot of agitation over that particular matter.
Right.
And that's because an assumption is made that almost everybody owns something or pays a light bill or pays some utility bill that means that they will be able to give you that proof of address.
But
there are a lot of people who are not in that position.
Okay, that the light bill and water bill still in the parents' name.
So that needs to be addressed, though. I agree with you.
You understand?
You got to find another way of dealing with that.
Got to go renew the license this month. We're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, that can create some problems for people who have had a difficulty improving where they live. By way of a utility bill. And as you said, a 20-year-old person, there are a lot of young people who live home. I mean, no bills come in their names. Some of them don't work. So it doesn't mean that they can't have access to a vehicle to drive. You'd be driving a parent's vehicle. So that is something that I think it needs to be revisited. I take the point. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Good afternoon, Winnie.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Well, fair to find Mr. Johnson. Good morning to you. Good afternoon to you. Now, you talk about this gentleman talk about the license. Well, people that living at home, bigger, you know, in a certain age, 20, I could understand he's not working yet and he still live at home. But some of these people that living at home, one bill shouldn't be coming to one person's name. If you're living at home, you should take one of the bill so you got something in your name. You see, they left everything to their mom or their dad or their grandparents, and they live in there.
So this is how you would correct the problem?
Yes, I would, because they would have to pay something every month. Mr. Adjan...
Well, paying something every month. Look, if you have a young person in your home, And yeah. even, look, Mr. you may Jones, even have somebody Jones, who's 45
years... Hold on a minute, please. You don't know me. When my son left school, I said to him, are you going back to you're going to go to college now? He wants a year off. I said, no, you're going to college or you're going to work. He went to work for a year, and I let him pay bills. You see, a lot of these parents today, everything is on a parent. The children coming home, eat and gone out, and they don't pay no bills.
Well, one recommendation here. I am not disputing that there are people in Barbados who do not pull their weight in households. I'm not going to dispute that. But I don't believe that it should be up to the state to force people to pull their weight in that way. I'm told here that a grandmother wrote a letter confirming that her grandson lives with her. So there may be a way around it other than saying, well, go back home, you have no proof. But they need to explain that. There are different scenarios. And in those circumstances, what can you do? Because you don't want to deny a person who otherwise is eligible to get whatever permission is required, only because they don't have a bill in their own name.
Anyway, listen, Mr. Jim, before the news come on, I got something to discuss with you, so I have to hold on, yes? Now, the gentleman that talked, you know, the one who said he was going to give some of his money to the government, what he was on earlier on.
Yes, some of his pension, yeah.
Yes, no. He never tell the government why he let home 3,500 workers.
Just before you go, let me just point out something here. One of the news people here, Ryan Jill, says that the minister said this morning that a release will be issued later today regarding the need for this proof of address for people under 16. Under 16, etc. So we can anticipate something from the Government Information Service most likely on this, because it is a valid concern which has been raised by people on this matter. Yes, you were saying now.
But what they do before they release anything or do anything, they should get everything right before they come to the public. Because you tell me A, and when I go, I cannot get you with A. Then you're going to come back and say you're going to release a statement. Before you release any statement, everything should be right. I know everything cannot be done on time, but too many mistakes are making, you know, and they got to rectify that at the moment. You know, and the next thing what I'm talking about now, I got three things to talk about quickly. The people are carrying mall rubbish on top of a truck. They don't have any cover, Mr. Ellis. They don't have none. And when you're driving behind them, the things are coming over on you. And I think it's a law should be there to see if you...
There's law. There's another one of these things. They tell the place lawless. They got a lot of people do a lot of things and get away with it, and nobody polices it and stuff. This is disturbing. And you reach a point where sometimes you can't even tell somebody, stop. You can't arrest somebody's attention. Like the little girl from the school who was drinking something from a bottle, a plastic bottle, and just threw it on the ground the other day out there by the park yesterday morning. And another person walking beside her and didn't even tell her, you know, that's wrong. This but isn't the way that we are supposed to live.
Please, Mr. Ellis, listen to me. It is very dangerous, because today we were coming back from the market, and the man have all the galvanized and everything with a couple of little boards. And if it's a good wind, it's going to fly over and other little thing, one piece drop off. And it's a good thing, you know, we have to break. And you know what they should do? Put more police, get more police with equipment, some in plain clothes, in car, unmarked car, I mean, and try and drive up and down and see if they can catch some of those people. It's getting out of hand, sir. I am going to wait after the news, yeah?
Okay, thank you. Well, she signaled it. StarCom Network News is next.